to Rover Sports. And we are here and we are live right in the city of Brotherly Love. And this is Rover Sports, and we have ourselves a superstar in town, number one, James Harden, and this is the home of now the 2-0 Philadelphia 76ers with James Harden, and this has been some of the most exciting basketball that this town has ever seen. I'm here with Charlie Bowles, Mike Vito. The Doc will be joining us in a bit. Charlie, I just got to ask you, how much fun was it on Friday night and Sunday watching those games? How invested were you?
He's good now.
Oh yeah. Sorry about that. Fixed on my mic. I never highly invested. I will be totally honest, but I'm trying to think of the comparison that I had it to. Almost like being out with your girlfriend, but you know deep down she likes somebody else. Like I here's where I'm going with this. The Sixers starting five is top three, top four in the NBA. No, I am on board with that. I am a season ticket holder. I am there. I am on board. I am petrified at what I think about when the lights go down, meaning the Sixers bench is ranked 23rd in the league. They're by far one of the worst benches I've ever seen. They've gotten even weaker. I have a suggestion on how to fix it, too. I'm not just here with a problem. I'm here with a solution. DeAndre Jordan, they keep talking about that, would obviously help. But without changing this bench, they will get into competitive games down the line, and in the playoffs especially, where they can't come back from, that their bench will bury them, and they'll never be able to come back from. Right now, you're going to see them go out. Harden and Embiid are going to get that 10, 12, 16-point lead, and all of a sudden they get it down to 6 or 8, and they come back in. When you go against a Miami, a Milwaukee, a Phoenix, a Golden State, that lead, that may be tied when they go out of the game. And what happens as Korkmaz comes walking onto the court? Danny Green comes waltzing out to the court. And all of a sudden, they come out and you're down 12. Like, I have a solution, and I want to hear what you think about it, because I'm curious. Tobias Harris doesn't fit in this offense. He's lost. He's lost. He's reaching out for help. He's saying, please help me. I have the solution. Move Tobias Harris to the bench. Take that pressure off him and suck up your pride, Tobias. This is to win a championship. That will give him more time with the ball to score, to play his game with the pressure off him now. It will also fill a glaring need that the Sixers have, which is some pop off the bench. Danny Green doesn't provide that. Furkan Korkmaz does not provide that. These guys are, at best, streak shooters that rarely go on a streak. I think if you sign Jordan, I would put Harris on the bench. I'd try like hell to find a sniper out there that I don't care if he plays defense. As long as he can bury a couple threes in the first 8 minutes of the game, like Ivoroni, when they won back then, he served a role. He didn't do much, but he served a role. I think that's what they need, and I think I could fix this team. I hope somebody's listening.
Yeah, yeah. I look at Eric Gordon, right? Might be a buyout guy. So in the starting lineup, you would then put who would be in the starting lineup instead of Tobias Harris from the bench? Who would you place on that?
Well, right now, I think we'd have to go to the buyout market and find a sniper. Like, is Gary Harris the answer? Is Terrence Ross the answer? There's got to be someone out there that you can either pry away or, and again, like I said,
yes.
No one remembers that Mark Ivoroni was the fifth starter back when the Sixers won in 83. He played the first 8 minutes. He never saw him again. But, he came in, he filled some bizarre role that they needed. And then, he came out and then Clint Richardson, Harvey Catchings, Bobby Jones, all those guys came in and filled their role.
Bellinelli was on this team actually a couple of years ago.
He would be perfect.
Ilyasova was kind of like offered you that depth.
Sarek.
Oh,
anybody,
yeah.
Anybody that could give them 6 to 10 points in the first 8 minutes, not totally destroyed. Like, J.J. Redick, are you listening? Pick up the phone and call him. Like, I mean, they get nothing from Tobias Harris. Nothing. So the only, he's useless in the starting lineup. So,
well,
maybe rejuvenate his, this isn't permanently. You can put your ego to the side. Go to the bench. It's probably best for you because you don't have a role in the offense anyway. Even when you are in, you're not hitting anything anyway. So maybe he becomes this like, it's not going to limit his, I'm not saying limit his minutes. I'm just saying move him around as a different piece
on
the board.
I got you. Or like keep him in with the bench. I would actually though, I still think Tobias can like have some success in this offense. I know he's really struggled of late, but you're going to need his defense in the playoffs because he's a big physical guy. And now with Harden and Maxey, you're a little small defensively.
Well, you see a lot of the games. How many games has Tobias Harris scored 17 in the first 12, 13 minutes and ended up with 19? I mean, he seems to disappear as the game goes on.
Right. He attacks. Like, that's when he's at his best. You're right. When he has the ball, no he's pressure, attacking the rim.
No pressure. Beginning of the game, no pressure. You know, first 8 minutes of the game, he's tossing up shots that don't mean much, and he's making them.
Exactly. Mid-range. He can't shoot the threes, and that's the thing. He comes up short on those shots. The city's already kind of in his head a little bit with his role. You know, it's going to have to be a huge factor is Shake. Because Shake, I think he had a game against Atlanta or something where he surprised off the bench last year with some knockdown threes.
I think Shake is living off that game against the Lakers 2 years ago when he had like 32 or 36 off. You know, when I struggle with Shake Milton. I wonder if he's an NBA player at the end of the day. I know Korkmaz is not. I don't know Glenn Doc Rivers' love for Korkmaz. I just can't figure it out. Take away the occasional three-pointer he makes. Have you ever watched the guy run the, you know, off ball or run the baseline? Or I mean, he's a train wreck. If he does happen to break open on a backside of a pick, the ball's going to go through his hands. I mean, it's so frustrating to watch that these guys get paid so much money to make these decisions. And I keep figuring, they must be smarter than me. Look at the money they're making. And at the end of the day, I don't believe it anymore.
I'm not the biggest Korkmaz guy because he can't really defend. And occasionally he can knock down threes in the regular season like you're talking about. Another guy who's going to struggle is probably Niang. He's probably going to struggle massively on the defensive end. Now, he could play make more than Korkmaz. He can at least put the ball in the deck and find people.
Niang reminds me, I think my wife Julie says this all the time, of the guy at the rec league, who's the best guy at the rec league. He comes out and he bangs a couple threes and looks really good. But you know what I mean? But then as the playoffs happen, like with Curry, this happened a lot. The windows get tighter and tighter. And this free ball is now half-court basketball, and the windows get very – it's almost like when you go from college to pro in the NFL, the windows get real tighter if you're a quarterback. These windows to get these shots off get smaller and smaller and smaller, and the defense gets, you know, they don't play a lot of defense in the regular season, but in the playoffs, the defense gets stepped up tenfold. And I think that's when these guys get exposed and where they've been exposed over the last couple of years. And I think this year, it's even a glaring factor that DeAndre Jordan, I think, would be a fantastic addition. And at the end of the day, I do think that they desperately need that sniper, and I'm not crazy by saying, see if J.J. Redick is interested. I don't think that's totally off the wall. You don't need anything from him, but, you know, 9 points in a quarter. I don't think that's totally off the wall at this point, because I do think that at the end of the day, you will find Tobias Harris gets so swallowed by this offense that he's going to be such a non-factor at one point that everyone's going to say, I told you so. Like, I knew it. Well, I know it now. I don't need to say anymore. I've seen enough.
And you know what? J.J. Redick can... You could definitely sell him on a championship, but let's talk about the positive, all right?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of positive.
Let's talk about how much fun it is having James Harden here. And it seems like James Harden now at this point in his career, he's kind of overscoring the points. And it seems like a big man like Embiid, I guess it's only a honeymoon, right? And it's only a week. Just talk about James Harden, his happiness, his motivation is definitely not the same as it's been in those other places.
Yeah, he's been, I mean, again, you could, look, he admitted himself, which takes, you know, look, I give him a lot of credit. I never wanted to be in New Jersey. I wanted to be in Philly. I mean, that's the guy that gave a lot of credit for being blatantly honest.
Yes.
And he looks, obviously, looks like he's in better shape than he's been in a long time.
Might have been on a juice cleanse or something.
Yeah, he looks like he's in fantastic shape. He looks very motivated. He looks very excited. And I know that these pundits screaming A. Smith and all these other guys want to trash him and say, he's not motivated. He's never won. Well, he's never been in this situation either where, you know what, sometimes it just takes the right situation at the right time. And I think that if you're ever... this is ever going to turn into something for James Harden. I think this, you know, with this, and we've already seen it. Again, we're talking about Minnesota with tired legs after coming back from 15 down against Memphis the night before And you're talking about the Knicks, who are not any good. But you've also seen enough to say, like, wow, there's a lot of potential here. Let's see where it goes.
There absolutely is. Now, in that game against the Knicks, the one thing about the playoffs is that Embiid's not going to get the calls. The ref calls. Because that was a foul upon that Knicks game. So that's also something to worry about, too, is the physicality with Embiid and Harden, I would say, like, in a playoffs.
And you may see that as quick as tomorrow night change. I'll be really curious if Thibodeau didn't have a talk with the NBA after that last game, and you may see Embiid get to the line maybe half of what he did last time, and you may see Embiid screaming about, I got fouled. Because it never really happens like that twice. Like, I mean, especially they're playing back-to-back. And he went to the line, what, 27 times on Sunday? Like, that's crazy. So I think that if Thibodeau was smart, he would have went right to the NBA office and said, look, man, let's look at every one of these calls. You know, you're giving this guy way too much. He doesn't have to do anything to draw a foul. He's getting in on reputation alone. And I'm going to be really curious tomorrow night to see how many times Embiid get over-under. I'd put it 13.
And you know what? Even as a Sixers fan, it's almost a little ridiculous watching, you know, some of the ways that these fouls are called, because you want to see these guys earn their buckets, and Harden and Embiid can certainly do that. But, Charlie, I think you're with me on this. You like the trade from the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And you got to commend Daryl Morey for bringing in Harden. Now they at least have a chance. Like, you might be relying, you're right, on like Isaiah Joe. Like, I believe Isaiah Joe should be taking Korkmaz. Like, give the kid an opportunity. And also the other thing is that Maxey, he might be playing just out of his mind right now. I don't know. He's playing like an all-star. I don't know if he's at this level yet where he's a consistent 23-point-a-guy playoff guy.
Well, Calipari is the one who said, you have no idea what you have in Maxey. And I think that he's, you know, again, with Harden on the floor, he just exasperates his game. But
yes,
you got to give Morey credit that Ben Simmons was never coming back. So you didn't trade Harden for Simmons. He was never coming back. So he had to go into the trade, you know, at a disadvantage right away, knowing this. So he basically traded Harden for his backup center, who, granted, was playing really well. And Drummond is a fantastic backup center. And Curry, who I think not only had a bad 2 months, but I think in the playoffs, you would have saw that, you know, his productivity go backwards a bit. Because, again, because the defense gets so much more intense and those open looks are just not going to be there.
Well,
anymore.
He is exactly, ironically, the guy that you pointed to at the beginning of the segment with James Harden. That could have been useful.
Yeah, team. I mean, like I said, because the spacing will be a lot different, and if they would have been able to hold on in, but I guess
off the bench, Seth
Thibel, you know, as much as he has, he's such a liability on the offensive end, but he's the best on ball defender in the NBA. Stats prove it. I mean, the guy plays fantastic defense.
Guess what? Harden is also giving him confidence on the offensive end. He's actually back cutting and catching oops now.
And I think that's where he's going to be well utilized. He's obviously has not, you know, developed. I'm sure he's worked on, but he hasn't really developed a consistent 3-point shot yet. But again, with the back cuts the other day, and he had a couple easy baskets, which again gets him more into the game. And you know, again, Thibel, you kind of never know what you're getting. You know, if you get a three, you feel really lucky that you did. But like I said, with most of their bench, I mean, you can get, you know, every time they heave a three up, I mean, you're just hoping maybe most of the time it hits the rim. You know, Korkmaz missed the rim by 5-6 feet the other day on a wide open three. I don't think I've seen that since Little League or, you know, ABA ball. I think I'm coming down on it, but I just don't think the guy should be hogging the minutes he does. I don't think he's any good.
Yeah, so when you look at this East, I mean, unfortunately for the Sixers, I mean, last year if they had, you know, James Harden, now the East is just it's deep. You know, DeRozan's kind of at peak of powers. I would say though, Miami is still, because they're the team adept. They're the team that you just alluded to. It's going to be a fun playoff round. It's going to be very competitive. James is going to have to play out of his mind. You are going to have Toby win. But I'll tell you, the excitement level for these games and the idea of having James for like the next 3 or 4 years, unlike Jimmy Butler, this might be the biggest acquisition maybe in Philadelphia sports other than Harper that I can remember.
Well, just think, if you held on to Butler instead of Harris, where you'd be right now. Elton Brand got bullied by Tobias Harris's father back then, and you know, not only did he get bullied, not only did he keep him, he signed him to this like insane contract. I think there's 2 years left on that.
And it was ridiculous.
And you can bet they'll be trying to give that away again this year. And I bet.
And then Al went back to Boston for a bargain.
Yeah. I mean, but just think of the East. I mean, I was Miami day one, beginning of the year, a team I bet, the team I still think is going to win it. I just think inside outside, they have the perimeter shooters that any team would dream of. They have Jimmy Butler, who's that X factor. So they have it all. They have inside. They have outside. They have shooting.
Tyler's,
they have an X factor.
Tyler's playing a lot
Duncan
better.
Duncan Robinson. They have Lowry, and they got experience.
The key for them is if Bam could stay healthy. Bam's the difference in that team.
Plays great defense. Incredible defense.
The Bucks haven't really looked like themselves.
I know the Bucks. You have to give them their respect. They won the whole thing last year. But I. Embiid seems to dominate Giannis every time he plays him. It seems like he's in his head for sure. I watched Kyrie and the Brooklyn bench beat them over the weekend. Right. You know, it's hard to go back to back anyway. I think Milwaukee, I mean, just think of the first round matchups in the East are going to be unreal. Boston is a scare. Well, I mean, we saw them crush the Sixers.
Oh my God! Yeah, I mean, I know they lost to Indiana the other day, but that's a team I've been following because they have depth. You know, they have Tatum and Brown, but you also have like Pritchard, all these like guys that you kind of like on their team. Who else? Like Horford, Robert Williams. They're great defensively. Boston.
Where would you, if you had a 1-2-3-4 in the East right now, or 1-2-3-4 to go to the finals?
Yes.
Who's your team? Going to the finals? So who are the two going to the finals?
Of the Eastern Conference? Yeah, yeah. Like the top two?
Yeah.
I am going to say Miami. I think that we can easily put them in the top one. But then the battle for two is going to be... I think it all kind of depends on Embiid in these playoffs because...
Is Simmons hurt?
Gun to my head, I'm gonna. Yeah. I think Brooklyn's too far back. I don't like that they would be the eighth seed if I were betting.
Is Simmons hurt, or are they just they're playing this perfectly, where they're saying, "Well, it's his back, just to get him through the March 10th game."
I think it's totally that March 10th hurdle because they're gonna send him to Orlando. That's where he's gonna start. Gosh, I mean, you have Miami at the top, and then. You know, you do have Embiid. I do love the Sixers, so it's a shame, you know, to even think about this. I would go Milwaukee and then Philly, but then that fourth spot, I think we can rule out Cleveland. I think that they're a little bit of a pretender.
Chicago as well.
Is Chicago too young as well?
Chicago's too young,
DeRozan. Milwaukee and Miami are the biggest threats. But Chicago, Cleveland to me is fraudulent, and Boston is probably not, doesn't have the horses.
I think Miami...
Yeah,
I think Brooklyn.
You still think Brooklyn?
I think Brooklyn without Simmons, and then add Simmons if Simmons can get out of his own head and just rebound, facilitate, and play defense, and not worry about take his dunks and take his back picks and take his 15 a game that way and not worry about. The one thing, remember, they don't want him to shoot.
But that
so
bench
that's
is also terrible.
Yeah, but remember they don't want him to shoot. They don't need him to shoot. And I think that's the perfect situation for him. He can thrive in that offense now. And they don't want, look, you never know. Can KD and Kyrie and can they all get along in the end? I don't know. It hasn't been proven yet. But, KD's coming back, I think, this week. And then all of a sudden, I think they're, I love Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. Mike, I'm curious for you to answer Charlie's question. I know you were so impressed most likely by the 76ers, but who would you rank now as your new top four as Vito's getting his headphones? So Charlie, the Sixers though, where would you put them? They got to probably be in your top four. They got to be like top three with James Harden.
Yeah, 2-3. I think it's bizarre. I think they're all interchangeable. I think there's like four teams: Philly, Brooklyn,
the Bucks,
Miami, and Boston. That all kind of, you could put one at one, and one at five, and you'd believe the argument.
Yeah,
like, okay.
I'll even throw. I'm not going to throw in Cleveland because they're too young. But I even think if DeRozan is like playing at this another level, that they're you don't want to see them. in a round.
The East is stacked. I mean, it is a stacked conference.
If this was the West, you look at the Mavs, they only have one guy. The Nuggets have one guy. Memphis, even, right? They're young. I think the East is better from a depth perspective. But, Mike, now we're going to ask you the question, where do you see the Sixers ranking in the East, and what do you think about the potential playoff roads? Because we're talking about the Sixers compared to these other teams.
Yeah, sure. I personally think that the Sixers will at least go to the Eastern Conference Finals, and if not, go to the Finals. But that may be as far as they get. But as far as the East, the top four, I'll go Miami, our Sixers, Milwaukee. I will go Brooklyn, not necessarily in that order, but that if you want to go to the conference semifinals, we'll go those four, and who plays for the conference final in the East, I am going to put the Sixers there. And I'm going to go with Milwaukee. As crazy as that might sound, I feel like the experience of what they gained last year, and I don't know if they've gotten necessarily better this year, but I think that experience factor will help them out a lot. I mean, not that Miami doesn't have the great guys there to do it as well, and Lowry and all, but I feel like the experience and all there will win out. Giannis is just going to go into his mode and do what he's got to do. But honestly, and one of the biggest things that's going to be a detractor for the Sixers is the bench. But you've seen, what, 255 points out of these guys in the first two games. Maxey, Harden, and Embiid, there's no answer right now. If Doc does the rotation right where he can keep one and most likely two of the of Harden, Embiid, Harris, Maxey on the floor, it'll take away from the shortcomings of the bench where, like I said, you're going to have to defend these guys. Would they get to the line 40-some times the other night? I mean, it was incredible. Embiid alone was almost 30 times at the line himself. Like, they're going to wear these teams down. They're going to probably put these teams in foul trouble, so they're going to be at a disadvantage in trying to mix and match the matchups. And what was it? The Knicks had both their centers end up fouling out on Sunday.
Yeah.
So I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. Are the Sixers better than where they were this time now than last year? As far as they lost to Atlanta in Game 7, are they better than that to get past that, to at least get to the conference finals? In my opinion, yes. I think they are better and will get to the conference finals.
Yeah, the East is tougher this year, Mike. And you know what is going to be – yeah. And you know what, Charlie, is going to be interesting in the East as we kind of talk about these Sixers a little more is – James Harden against Drew Holiday. Like, that could be it could be tough a little bit for James against, like, Kyle Lowry and these guys. You're going to have Embiid in the playoffs be consistently at another level.
What about Harden against Ben Simmons? That's what's going to match the matchup. That's what's going to happen. I mean, that's what's going to happen in the playoffs.
But I happen to like the chemistry of the Sixers compared to, like, a Brooklyn that's just so strange.
Harden's one of these guys. He just – the way he plays the game, it looks like walking a tightrope. Anyone can do it, but Harden is just one of the. There's very few I think he's in that top echelon of scorers in the history of the NBA. That he, you know, it looks so easy when he does it, but he can do it to anyone at any time. Like, there's not too many people who shut down James Harden. I don't know who is. I ever, you know, how everyone
doesn't
has their
it
nemesis.
Doesn't it look like you can guard it? Like, even an average person can prevent the step back three, right? Just don't let him shoot the step back three. And then he's, like, almost doing these hop steps in the lane as a 6'4 guy. You'd think he'd get blocked.
If you saw Towns on that last, he had 2 4-point plays against Minnesota. And on the last one, the camera cuts away of Towns just shaking his head laughing, like after Harden had buried a three in his face and fouled him. Like, Towns just like, what do you want me to do? Like, I did everything. I can't stop this guy. Like, he's one of those guys, and when he gets in his zone, he's unstoppable. And that's what, you know, I think people not watching a lot of Harden that weren't true, like, basketball play, you know, you hear him, you see him once in a while, but, you know, the one thing about him that I knew coming into this is that guy is that good. This is not a fluke what he did. This is how good he really is. Like, this is every night James Harden.
Just
what
as
we
a
saw.
Passer, and in Houston, he was dealing with
so
parts.
Underrated, yeah.
He was dealing with parts that he had, like, no. He didn't have great pieces in Houston. Now he is older, and in the playoffs, he does have a checkered past. You know, when it gets very, very physical, but it has certainly been a remarkable run. We do have Coach coming in. I know that we do want to talk about college basketball. We're rolling right through. So Saturday, how much did you enjoy that, seeing the top six go down in college basketball?
Well, it's weird. I swear I love college basketball, and I do, but you really, until the NFL's over, don't focus as much as you do now. Like, you know, you watch it during, you know, it comes on, you watch it during the NFL season.
Thanksgiving's fun.
College football.
The non-con is kind of fun, you know, at some of those tournaments.
Afterwards, you get so, I mean, just so fixated on every game, and, you know, it seems like your intensity watching it goes up tenfold. And then Saturday to watch what happened, it's just a microcosm of the season, you know, and, you know what, seven of the top 10, top six lose, seven of the top 10, and the only reason it wasn't eight is because the 10 beat the seven. So,
yeah Baylor.
I mean, talk about parity. I mean, It you know, anyone who said they know is going to win the championship this year, I got news for you. I don't have a clue.
Because it was looking like Gonzaga. Now, they did play in St. Mary's, and St. Mary's is known to be one of the toughest places to play in the country.
But they, if you watch that game, they buried them.
St. Mary's shut them down, but they have a great coach and like an experienced point guard. Who's their Randy Bennett's their coach out there? They've had pros and. I guess Gonzaga kind of needed that. I would still say Gonzaga's the favorite, though, with Nembhard at point guard and then the big guy, Chet Holmgren.
Well, Coach, you've obviously coached high-level NCAA basketball. So what's your perspective on all this?
I love it. It's the best part of the year, in my opinion, starts this week with March Madness. I mean, you get the conference bids are starting to happen. Teams are jumping into it. There's no guarantee. There's no who's going to go undefeated. There isn't like a Kentucky that was running the table a couple years ago, when they had Karl Anthony Towns and all those guys. And there's no Duke now. Duke has got a great point guard. They're a good team. I mean, clearly they destroyed Syracuse the other day. But I mean, the best part is what's going on right now. You know, and it's interesting looking at this right now. UMass has already fired Matt McCall. He's a Billy Donovan disciple. There's going to be so much turnover in terms of the coaching ranks. But, guys, this is the best part of college basketball. Like, 2 or 3 weeks ago, everyone's down in Memphis, and my buddy will be calling in Jordan, who's on staff down there. And it was in turmoil. Everyone thought, you know, maybe they're going to get rid of Penny. And now all of a sudden, they're making a run. And, you know, the best part is it all comes down to Charlie. You know this. Who gets hot at the right time? You know, there's going to be a lot of, I would, like, every 4-13 is going to be something you're going to look at and go, oh my, you know, so
look at UCLA last year, Charlie.
Exactly. They have a playing game.
To me, right now, that team is hot as Arkansas. I think they're so interesting to watch. They've had some really big wins over the last 4 weeks. I think they're, you know, again, Duke has got four first round draft picks. But Arkansas seems to be the team that keeps coming back to my head. It's like Auburn last year, and I almost ran it all the way to the table with Auburn, but it's Arkansas. They just keep – every time I think of a team, it's Arkansas.
Oh, you know what? I think it was the year they went to the Final Four, right? The year you liked them with Jared Harper, and if they didn't foul Kyle Guy.
Yep, they go to the final.
Oh, they beat Kentucky. They killed North Carolina. Let's talk about those teams, right? Auburn's kind of limping a little bit in the SEC.
Yeah, I mean, Spencer, if you went through the latest bracketology, and obviously 2 weeks from Sunday is the best time in the world to be a part of it. When teams get picked and who's the mid-major that's going to shock the world. If you look at the top seeds that they have, you know, Gonzaga in the one, Baylor in the one, Arizona is playing phenomenal. And Arizona is another fun team that's fun to watch, you know.
Oh, great style. It's crazy how in 1 year that coach Tommy Lloyd like just pumped them right back.
Yeah, but they have everybody back too. Like the cupboard wasn't bare when Miller left. I mean, Jack Murphy, who I've known for a while, Jordan will speak to him. He's on staff there. I mean, in Kansas, you can never forget Kansas. Kansas is going to be right there. And they were supposed to have a down year this year, Charlie. And, you know, with all the allegations and every the sanctions.
Oh, gee.
Well, in the end, like I said, I kept thinking, like, you know, when I was thinking about this year, I'm like, is there a Loyola Chicago or a Colgate or a Jacksonville State or, you know, somebody playing really well this year? In the end, is it going to be just the same six or eight, or is it going to be someone get through this year? If any year, it's going to be this year.
Mm-hmm. What you think? Like a Cinderella can really break through?
I think like a 5 seed could probably win it all this year. I agree with you.
I actually think it's deep at the top though. Like these top 10 teams are all pretty dang good. Look at Kentucky, right? Ty was hurt for a while, and you were watching that game. This Shiblay kid, he was at West Virginia, right? He can't really shoot at all. He was known as just a rebounder. this is one of the greatest stories maybe ever of in terms of an upset of being the player of the year from kind of a just like an average basketball player at West Virginia. It's pretty amazing, this Oscar Shibley kid at Kentucky.
This is the first year this late in the year I haven't like said I think they're going to win it. I think if I would, it'd be Arkansas. Yeah. That would be.
I would agree with
it. And actually, last year we had two. The two ended up in the final, right? Baylor, no. Gonzaga.
Well, yeah, you did. Yeah, or was it, yeah, you're right.
Baylor, Trillin.
UCLA lost with when Suggs hit that shot.
So that's the thing, like, because we could have four very good Final Fours. You know, the SEC, of course, with Duke now, the ACC. That's what's crazy is that it's crumbling. I mean, Louisville, Florida State. It's just not the same.
Has the SEC taken over basketball too? Is that kind of where we're at right now? Like, it seems like it.
Guess
sure
what?
Sure seems like it.
Absolutely. You got Pearl. You got Musselman. Musselman could really build a program. Who else in Tennessee?
Arkansas, Kentucky. I mean, they're all good teams.
Even Alabama, you're a Bama football guy. Yeah, their basketball team should be better.
They're so... Again, you're right. They look like, you know, some nights you're like, oh, my God, Alabama, this team's fantastic. And you're like, oh, my God, they're terrible. They're really hot and cold.
It's the gauntlet of the SEC. They beat Gonzaga this year. That's like the most fun conference to watch. One of my favorite teams, though, Charlie, and I'm not sure how they're going to do in March because they're struggling a little bit. It's Texas Tech because they just grind on you defensively.
I got close to them. I got close to falling in love with them. Until about 10 days ago, and I'm trying to go, was it Texas or was it who beat them? But I was like, Tech could be that team. You know, Tech could be that team, and they just, I think they lost the next day.
Yeah, like to TCU over the weekend.
But that's kind of par for the course. I mean, everyone has kind of lost in the last week, so it's not, you know, it's not real.
But Charlie, here's the deal now. No coach will ever admit to it, okay? They'd rather lose this week, okay? Get that out of the system. Hey, guys, guess what? You know how this is. You know, you get the mindset of how does this feel? You don't want this, okay? The next loss could be the last loss. You get that taste in their mouth, and that's exactly what you want to have.
Oh, you're talking, because I think, Coach, in 2 weeks is when it's conference tournament.
No,
well, right
starts,
now is the
mid. This week, actually.
Well,
this
right now it's the mid-majors.
Started yesterday with Fairleigh Dickinson, Central Connecticut last night. You weren't watching it?
But the Big East is in 2 weeks.
Yeah, but Spencer, the big ones, all of a sudden the magic starts happening now. The conference tournaments are coming. The best time in sports is now. Every game matters. And, like, living it and being a part of it at Memphis and New Mexico State, and there's nothing better.
Yeah,
there is
be
nothing good. Better than you eat, sleep, and breathe it. Now, as a video coordinator, you know it is the worst 36 hours of your life because all you're doing is trying to get games, and it's a nightmare. And Jordan will come on, and we had many a nights we're up till 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning breaking down games, and we get every game there is.
So let me ask you a question, Coach, okay? So you're at New Mexico State. It's a one big league. Now, when you won the tournament, like, were you ever a one seed and got upset in the tournament, or were you ever a three seed and did the upsetting? Talk about...
Well, we were a two seed, and then we were a four seed, so...
And I bet you in the conference tournament, the long shot seeds are throwing the kitchen sink.
You know the funny part is, in one bid, here's the real reality, and Charlie, like, one of the low major, it's going a big difference between the high majors, because you're getting the top 8 or 9 teams in.
Yeah,
the low majors, you know what I always say, it's like an audition all season, okay, till March, to the conference tournament, because once you get the conference tournament, because that's the only time it matters. You're only getting one bid unless you're playing like a Memphis where you're like a 38 in Palm, okay, and you're playing like the Auburns and teams that, you know what, that have a high non-conference schedule, because most likely, you know what, you're just a one-bid team. Like,
it's a big deal when a mid-major gets a couple teams in the tournament.
Oh, my God, it's huge. Like, when you know, we thought we were stealing a couple bids sometimes.
Oh, the Mountain West is that I'm enjoying Wyoming this year, or Colorado State, like watching
Colorado
them.
Colorado State's a really good team.
Yeah, watching them. But, Coach, it's so much pressure as a one seed. It must be incredibly devastating.
I was never a one seed.
Well, here's the thing. You dominate your conference, right?
Yeah,
and then you lose in the conference tournament. You don't get in, but you know what? That's why the conference tournament's great, I guess, because it is a one and done scenario. And you're absolutely right, because this is like the appetizer before it. But you alluded to this. Baylor lost to Oklahoma State in like the quarterfinals of the Big 12 tournament, and it's that whole argument, Charlie. Right? rest versus the tournament. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it depends on your team. I personally, I mean, these kids are never 18, 19 years old.
You don't need rest.
Yeah, I think they'd rather be playing than sitting still any day. At my age, I want to rest. But, 18, 19.
Let me make this perfectly clear, okay? As a coach, we're not resting anybody. We're getting them in the best shape. They're in the best shape through chemistry and everything else. You're not saying, it's the conference tournament. We've already got my bid. No way. No way. You want these guys, the chemistry building as much as possible.
Looks like we're getting a phone call. It looks like Jordan is likely going to be joining us, Coach.
I guess what do I hit?
He's connecting us through, actually.
This is his father. This is funny.
So you can you can roll him in. This is a good buddy of Coach Josh Daish.
Jordan.
Yes.
Jordan, thanks for joining us in Philadelphia. Obviously down in Memphis, the director of scouting, I noticed, a new profile. Congratulations on the role. Yeah.
Appreciate it, Coach.
So Jordan, obviously Memphis, I'm looking all over these brackets right now, and it has you right now in the first four, the last four in from Palm. It all depends. What's the excitement level right now down on Beale Street?
You know what? We're just trying to take it one game at a time. We know that our motto lately has been go 1-0, so it's easy to look ahead and kind of do all that bracketology searches and all that stuff, but none of that's going to be possible if you don't win the next game. So that's been our motto the last few weeks, go 1-0, and it's got us 7 out of 8. So
Jordan, you got a guy down there, a Philadelphia guy in Jalen Durant. What's his mindset been like this year? Obviously, there's high expectations in June of being drafted. How's he been?
He's been great, man. He's really improved by leaps and bounds, especially lately. We've been really trying to make him a focal point of our offense and kind of establish him early on in the game and see what the defense does. A lot of times you guys have no other choice but to double him. So it opens up opportunities for our shooters on the perimeter, and he's a very unselfish player, and he makes the right reads. And obviously he's an anchor on the defensive end. He's just an automatic eraser for – unfortunately, it probably gives our guards too much of an excuse not to play great perimeter defense because they know he's behind them. So,
right. So Jordan, it's Spencer Grossinger here, a friend of Coach Daish's, and thanks for joining us on Rover Sports. I want you to talk about maybe the game that changed your season. You're down in Houston at number 14, Houston. They're making a run late, and you guys fend them off. Talk about the mental toughness of going to Houston, kind of the confidence that needed to be built to go into Houston and get that done.
Well, you know what? Actually, I want to rewind it a little bit further beyond that. We were actually playing, I believe it was early February. We had just lost 3 games in a row. We're down in Tulsa, who's in 10th place in our league, and we're down 14 at halftime. And that was like the real turning point of our season. We came back in the second half. We started playing really unselfishly. It ended up leading us to, I think, 2 or 3 games before we actually got to play Houston on the road. And then we had a 3-game stretch where we go at Houston, at Cincinnati, at SMU, which, at the time, those were the top 3 teams in the league. We start off with Houston, and we jumped on them. I think we were up like 15-4 or something like that. And then, it's a brutally tough place to play. The fans are right on top of you, and
it's a great arena.
They just redid their arena, and if you've been there, it's great. Their fans were into the game. Obviously, it's kind of become a nice little rivalry in the American, and they willed them back in. They ended up taking the lead at halftime, and our guys showed some incredible toughness and being able to withstand the run and take their punches and be able to punch back late in the game we were able to survive, and it's been kind of the jump start to our season. We got another chance. I know they're going to want redemption this weekend. They travel back our way on Sunday. So,
Jordan, Charlie Bowles with Coach Daish and Spencer. It's great to speak with you again. Nice win on Sunday, especially. I watched some of that against Wichita State. Cool court.
Appreciate
too. Let me ask you a question about this. These are young kids. South Florida's, and it may be just a benign question, but South Florida looks like they're having, a rough year. How hard is it to keep them focused knowing that game with Houston could mean a ton going in, just what, a couple days later? Like, is it just easy at this point just to keep them so focused on South Florida, or could they potentially overlook if you don't kind of keep them, you know, head down? You know, we got to worry about today. Is it tough even at that level?
No, you're absolutely right on. I mean, that was our biggest focus. We probably talked to our guys for 10 minutes before practice. You know, we got a whiteout on Sunday. It's senior night or senior day or whatever. CBS tip. You got Raftery and Nance on the
ball. Oh, my.
Ball. You know, it's obviously going to be a great game. It's going to be a great environment. So, we had to talk to them. You know, we emphasized that 1-0 mindset again. And, South Florida is just, it's a weird place to play, man. There's not a ton of energy in the gym usually. And, I've watched a bunch of their games this year. And, you know, they've struggled, especially on the offensive end. But then they'll jump out and get you. Like, I watched them play Central Florida a couple days after UCF beat us. They go down and just drill UCF by 24 at home. So, I mean, it's still college basketball, man. You still got to play the games. And, you know, the standings don't really mean much at this time of year. You just got to take care of your business.
So Jordan, I wanted to ask you, as a director of scouting, and you guys at Memphis, you brought in the 2 5-stars this year, but you also have an Evansville transfer that I like, because I watch the Valley. So just talk about, like, at the beginning of the year, you guys, I guess the expectations were so big on your team, and how it actually took, like, patience to kind of figure out, like, who your core would be. Like, was that a huge challenge, you know, for you guys?
Absolutely. There's a very fine line. You know, a lot, I probably would bet that 99% of the coaches in the country would trade our roster for theirs any day of the week. We got a great roster. We got a lot of talent. But sometimes it's hard to get all that talent to mesh, especially early on. Our 5-star guys, they missed all summer. Both of them committed to us in August. They came down literally the weekend that school started. Imani actually came down after school started, like the week after. They didn't get all that time in the summer where you implement, like, what you're doing defensively, your kind of the base of your team. You know, they missed all that. But you're absolutely right with DeAndre. He's kind of the glue to our team. I feel like everybody on our team knows that. He missed the beginning of the year last year while his transcript was being, you know, worked on, and the NCAA finally cleared him mid-December, I believe. But by that point in time, Memphis was 6-5, something like that. And then once they got DeAndre, you know, they went on a run. They won like 14 of their last 15 games, including the NIT championship. And so, again, we went through a little stretch without him this year too, and we struggled. You know, he's just a guy that brings energy. He may make some mistakes because, you know, we all do, but he plays just so hard and just plays through those mistakes, and you can never fault his effort.
And Jordan, you're a Michigan kid, so having Larry Brown and Rasheed Wallace, like, did you grow up watching, like, those Motown Pistons teams that won the championship? And what is it like as a coach that's still growing in this business? What's it like having Larry Brown and just having him share stories and share wisdom with you?
It's awesome, man. I told him, you know, I was at game one of the first home game of the finals, where the year that we beat the Lakers. And, looking back at some of those scores, it's just incredible to see. Like, they're holding teams in the playoffs to 72 points or something like that. You know what I mean? It's just absolutely nuts. And then just to be able to use him as, like, a resource and bounce ideas off him and just listen to the stories that he has over all the years of coaching. And if you just look at all the guys that have been assistant coaches under him, Coach Cal, Coach Self, Coach Popovich, like, the list goes on and on. Turge and Danny Manning played for him. I mean, there's just – his lineage and his tree is just so vast, you know.
Yeah,
so he's
that's
just got stories for
quite
days.
A coaching tree.
Yeah.
Jordan,
I'd like to think that that's probably pretty unmatched in the college world.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm sure you'll add to that legacy when you move up.
Oh, get out of here, Coach.
So
I appreciate your confidence in me.
So real quick, you share the FedEx Forum with probably the best, maybe the most electric player. I don't know if you were at the game last night with Ja Morant. Has one of the things that I loved when I was down there with you guys was how much we interacted with the Grizzlies. how much of these guys have kind of like bonded or interacted with the Grizzlies? And as
go ahead.
And you know, obviously, one of the coolest things, and I remember, and I won't say share the words that Rick Carlisle shared with our team that year. We had Will Bart and Tariq Black and everything else when they were in the when the Dallas Mavericks were in the locker room, and Rick Carlisle just told everybody exactly how he felt in the most politically incorrect way about
It's a little bit different now than it was then, just because I think COVID is still a little bit scarier for teams. You know, a lot of NBA teams aren't really getting out as much beyond what they have to. I mean, Ja has been very, like, he's very involved with our program. We have every year we have an open practice on the first day of practice. A bunch of our boosters come, and Ja was sitting there front row watching practice. You know, he's been to two or three games where he's sitting courtside, and he's kind of built a bond, especially with Imani. They have a friendship and a connection, and just to be able to pull down into the loading dock of the Forum and see Ja's jersey for his parking spot is pretty special, especially with what he's been doing lately. I wasn't at the game last night. My wife actually was, and she just texted me. She's like, "Dude, Ja Morant is unreal." As I saw on ESPN earlier today, I think they were doing like a most electric athlete that's, you know, competing in sports right now, and Ja Morant got all three of the votes. You know, what he's doing right now is unbelievable.
Jordan, as the season comes, obviously we're in March, and some of the teams, you know, I always say this, the best part of Selection Sunday is, you know, for the fans, and as a video coordinator, those are like the longest 36 hours of our lives. What are some of the things that you guys are seeing, you know, trends with certain teams, obviously, that you may be keeping an eye on? Obviously, you're in your own conference right now, but who are some of the teams that you've seen this year or watched that have really stood out to you?
Some of the teams, man, like I've always been a fan of, I've always watched a lot of Big Ten basketball. And so early on, like what Purdue was doing early on was unbelievable, especially on the offensive end. They seem to have like the same team every year. You know, they have a big guy. They have a great backup big. They got a shooter on the outside. They got an athlete, and they got a point guard that just kind of controls the game. You know, it's just like rinse and repeat. That's what Matt Painter does. And them early on were really impressive. Obviously, Gonzaga and the front court that they have, and Kentucky, when watching them mesh together with all their transfers, has been pretty impressive. And some of the guys, I watched Iowa for the first time the other day. I can't remember who they were playing, but man, that Keegan kid, whew, he can really go. That was the first time I had seen him play, and it's just like, geez, that's not normally what Iowa's got, you know, but he could really go.
So obviously, as we're getting ready to wrap up the regular season, and obviously there's a lot of buzz right now, where do you guys think, like, obviously there's a goal? Then sometimes we'd always say, like, if we get the 20 wins, you know, we're definitely locked. Is there a certain number we're thinking with the tournament coming around the corner, which is which you guys are hosting? Or no, it's in Fort Worth, Texas.
No, we're Fort Worth. I wouldn't say there's a number, man. It's like we don't have the luxury of being in a Power 5 league, you know, and we just got to go out and take care of business every single night. Like, we can't really leave our fate in the hands of a committee because, we just don't get the same cushion, I guess, that teams like in the Big Ten or the Big East or the Big 12 get. You know, if you lose a game, no big deal. You're playing another important one 2 days later. I remember looking back. I don't know how much you guys look at KenPom, but
not as much as I used to.
The year that we played St. Louis,
yeah,
I have to check my numbers. They're a little bit of an estimate, but it was an 8-9 game if I remember correctly.
It was.
And so that year, I believe we were ranked 12th in KenPom, and we got an 8 seed. St. Louis was ranked, I believe, 17th in KenPom, and they got a 9 seed. And so that was just an unbelievable 8-9 game. I mean, you know, I think we went – was that the year? No, I think the next year was the year we went undefeated in conference. But my point being is, like, you can't have any slip-ups or it really affects you when you're in a quote-unquote mid-major league and you're not in the Power 5 and And so we just got to take care of business every single night and try not to leave our fate up to a committee.
Jordan, how's Penny been as a coach in terms of like how you start off slow and then, you know, a lot of, I mean, we all saw the press conference. How has he been with the, and anyone can YouTube it as well. But, you know, how has his demeanor changed over the last couple of weeks with you guys getting back on track?
You know what? He's the ultimate player's coach, and he's got a great relationship with the guys. He can get, go in at them, and you know, they know that he cares about them, and so it's not that big of a detriment. I feel like out of all the coaches I've worked for, he is really, really elite at personnel. You know, being an NBA player and seeing the game through those eyes for so many years. I think he was in the league, what, 15 years, something like that. And just listening to him, like when he watches a team play for the first time, he picks up on tendencies with personnel so quickly. It's really fascinating. So he's very, very good at that. We got a great staff, obviously, with Coach Brown and Coach Topper. You know, Coach Topper does a lot of the scouts with me, and so his X's and O's and adjustments are right on point. And then to match that with Coach Hardaway's personnel and his eye for that is a great combination. We're starting to, you know, round into form a little bit here at the right time, so.
Well, we wish you luck down the stretch, Jordan, and we'll be in touch. So thanks for joining us.
Yeah, Jordan, you'll have to get out and golf with us and take Coach's lunch and golf a little bit.
Sounds good.
I hear in New Mexico you got after him pretty good.
At Memphis.
At Memphis you got after him pretty good.
Jordan's the only guy that can hit the ball 300 yards in flip-flops.
I don't really take golf very seriously. I just try to go out and have a good time.
The famous story is the nitro ball, but that's enough for another time. all right, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Right, thank you.
Appreciate it.
That was a great call with Jordan and just his experience, you know, working with Penny Hardaway and all those coaches.
Jordan's been around. He's worked on 4 or 5 different staffs. He's worked with Penny Hardaway this year. He's been with Donnie Tindall, who was when he was in the G League. He's been with Bruce Pearl. He's been with Josh Pastner.
So he went there for grad school to Memphis?
Yeah, and he did. And him and I, you know, he was a great addition, you know, in terms of really helping out with the technical side of things. And the video world's come a long way in the last 10 years.
So was he there before you were there? So he kind of showed you the road.
We showed up the same time.
And he was young, right?
Yeah, so he was, you know, Jordan lived with the guys. I lived with the guys at one point. Bounced around, went to Maui Invitational, first couple NCAA tournaments together. Yeah, I mean,
so cutting film, you got to have a buddy like that film, right?
Well, you need, every coach wants, like, every game, you know, the night before, when the NCAA, when they make the announcement at 6 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock, and all of a sudden your team's there, all the coaching staff's at this party with the boosters and the players are there, except the video guys, because they want film immediately. As soon as like that, okay, who we got, you know? And by the way, back then we were recording every college basketball game on a DVD, and then from the TV, and we burn it to a DVD just on case. And then all of a sudden it was like just direct exchange. So it's come a long way. So.
Now, is the coach, head coach or staff relying on you guys to say, hey, look, tell me what you saw?
Absolutely. So we would cut offense, defense, player personnel. We would cut sets. Okay. And we literally, it's easy to say, okay, we want the last 3 games. No, they don't. They want every game, so every inbounds play, every side out of bounds play, everything you see. What's a tendency? Okay. And I will never forget this. Jack Murphy, who's the assistant coach at Arizona, when he was with us at Memphis, I was cutting film, and he kept saying, this guy's right hand heavy. Well, Murph, the only problem with that was Jordan put clips in that he was shooting with his left hand. So we're going through the personnel, and he's losing his mind. So it was a lot of fun. Yeah, we did everything. You know, it's easy. It's fun to be an assistant coach when you have one scout. When you're the video coordinator, you're every scout. You have every scout. Like, I used to say this, like, when you're done, when we used to get done, Jordan, people would say, okay, when the season's over, are you going to go watch the Grizzlies play? You don't want to watch basketball for a month. You kind of like want to like de-cleanse yourself.
Yeah, no, you're so dang tired. And then when the game starts, guess what? You're done, right? You can throw your hands up and enjoy it.
What a lot of people don't realize is they assume that you're just showing up on Saturday playing. Like, they don't see the, you know, again, I coach at a very low, you know, level in high school. But, you know, even that, like, you know, I can only imagine how much more intense it is as you go up the ladder to, you know, did the preparation just is you know, it's an 80-hour work week. Yeah. No, you know, there's a lot that goes into that Saturday two-hour event, you know what I mean, that goes behind the scenes.
Charlie, my favorite time was actually when the guys played, because I knew I didn't have to. Now, understand something. A lot of times Jordan would be behind the bench, and I'd be in the back room and be cutting the tape live, so I didn't have to cut it at the end. And you would, I had like 95 different buttons that I would create, and so coaches knew it was side out of bounds, personnel, free throws made, foul shots. You know, we even did body language. Body language, like when the camera would go certain players, and okay, well, because he's an idiot, okay, this is the type of body language, here, end of game situation, you know, less than 10 seconds on the shot clock. You had buttons for all of that. So
wow.
Yeah, we did all of it.
So would you tell your guys, hey, this kid has bad body language, you could get into him a little bit?
Well, of course, any type of tendency you could find, you know, yeah, you want that, and you want them to know.
Okay, so going into a tournament, is the scariest thing to go against a great point guard that can control everything, or is it a big? Like what position do you think is the most important for a tournament?
A point guard
run?
That can create for everybody else is the scariest position, because a big you can limit. You really can. All you got to do is try to get him in foul trouble and get him out. If a point guard can shoot and create for other guys, and you've got to be, and you can't stop him, it's over. It's going to be a hard time.
Sure.
You're going to be putting different guys on him every time. You're going to try to wear him out with other guys the entire time. You might play a box and one, but that can be limited, because if you got shooters, guess what? Now you're taking other guys away from him.
It's like the Connecticut teams. You know, those are the teams, Charlie, that like Shabazz, Walker, what's his name? The guy,
Walker on Michigan State right now. Walker, that guy just is fundamentally sound.
Kemba Walker.
Oh. Well, there's a kid Walker on Michigan State who's really fundamentally sound right now, too.
He's good, but their offense.
This is a Michigan State team, Charlie. I look at it and say, in this year, they could make a run.
It's unlike any year. Yeah. I have never been like, yeah, again, I thanked St. Mary's the other night for pulling me off the Gonzaga wall, because I think they did me a favor, because I was going to defer to them, because there's just no one. Yeah, I'm like, look, Gonzaga seems the most consistent. Yeah, they've had a few hiccups, but then you go back to, well, they haven't played anyone in a month, and you know, the best thing that ever happened was them dropping and me going back to Arkansas, because it kept. For the last 2.5-3 weeks, I've been like, this Arkansas team, but no one notices. Why is no one noticing? Like, what am I, an idiot? Like, why? You know,
I mean, why? You know, when I know, I started noticing, I have a Mr. Jerry Hardigan, who's always comments.
Arkansas.
He lives in Arkansas, and he's been raving about the work that they've been doing down there. Okay, you know, and he loves it. But you know what I noticed him when Kentucky was Auburn. They're jumping on the label. What am I thinking of? Right in the center of the court. And they go out and get beat by Arkansas. You know, Eric Musselman's been doing a great job down there. He really has. And I think some people worry that he'll leave and go take an NBA role, but he's having too much fun. And let me tell you something. You know those boasters down in the SEC.
Yeah.
They'll pay.
Yeah.
Arkansas, it's a wonderful spot. I think he was even in the NBA.
In a week.
But guess what? I think it's a deep field where you could see Elite Eights like one versus two. You know, you have Tennessee. That's like a pretty good team. In the SEC too, and
I think you could have a couple, like I said, 5 or 6 seeds go really deep into this tournament. Like, and it wouldn't be a shock this year. It's just, I mean, would you be shocked if anybody lost? I mean, if Gonzaga loses, you're gonna be shocked. No,
I'm gonna be pretty surprised.
I mean, not this year. You know, again,
Gonzaga's really they have.
What
all
I watched
the
other night was not. And they do, and so does Kansas, and so does Duke, and so does Baylor, and so does.
Well,
Auburn,
it's a very
so
good year for basketball. But it's going to be tough for a mid-major to really go through. Because I
well,
like,
that was my question earlier. Is it going to be the same five? I don't think so.
I think
someone gets through this
well,
year.
Well, Arizona, like Purdue, doesn't play defense, but Purdue's the team I want to like, because I love Jaden Ivey. I love Ivey, like he's the player that I like watching the most in the country.
Well, I mean, you got a local team in Villanova, whether they're a mid-major or not.
Senior
Charlie.
Leadership, yep. Yeah, is that going to matter?
You think Gillespie? Well, they need some
ring
out.
Come around on that kid. I actually really like that guy.
And
like
you know, we haven't even mentioned, you know, you could say that they only win close games, but the Providence Friars are having like a legendary year for Ed Cooley and this team. So, yeah, this tournament, there's nothing like the NCAA tournament.
Well, next week is the big, you know, again, we're getting through some tournaments this week. Like I said, the Ohio Valley and the Sun Belt and the, they're all playing this week. And next week, the big guns come out.
But, oh, yeah.
You know,
right, we're going to take a break right now. We'll be right back.
WWDB 860 AM Philadelphia and WPEN HD2 Burlington, Philadelphia.
Wonder if you should get tested for colorectal cancer? Well, it's the second leading cancer killer in the U.S., and screening helps prevent it. So if you're 50 or older, it's time. Even if it doesn't run in your family, most often colorectal cancer occurs in people with no family history. And it doesn't always cause symptoms, especially early on. So don't wait for symptoms to get tested. Screening helps prevent the disease by finding precancerous polyps so they can be removed. Remove the polyp, prevent the cancer. Screening also helps find colorectal cancer early when treatment works best. You might be thinking, oh no, not that test. But here's the thing, you have options. There's more than one screening test. Talk to your doctor to find the one that's right for you. No more excuses. If you're over 50, get tested, because colorectal cancer screening really does save lives. A message from HHS and CDC's Screen for Life campaign.
Imani wouldn't be here if it wasn't for St. Jude. Everything was perfect until that day when she was 5 weeks old.
That's when, you know, every parent's worst nightmare kind of came into fruition. So there was a fairly large and aggressive brain tumor, but St. Jude Children's Research Hospital gave us the ultimate gift in this world, which was hope restored. When, you know, me and my wife were here, there was not a single other care in the world except for Imani. St. Jude made that happen.
And she's tumor-free now. She's growing. She's just a happy child.
The second we arrived here, we had food, housing, transportation, treatment, you name it, it was taken care of by St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. So the people who donate to St. Jude, you know, I just want them to know that I don't think anyone in this world or anything in this world has given me a greater gift. We came as two desperate parents, and they saved our daughter's life.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, finding cures, saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
Mom and Dad used to argue about everything, especially about Dad's drinking. It drove me crazy. It got so bad, I couldn't do my homework. I couldn't concentrate. I absolutely refused to let any of my friends come to our house for any reason. I would have been humiliated if anyone found out how much my dad drank and how loud my mom screamed at him. My family went from totally crazy to quiet, calm, and even peaceful. The only thing that happened is my mom started going to Al-Anon family groups. Her relationship with my dad really changed. I asked Mom if she would take me to her Al-Anon meetings or to Al-Ateen. I wanted to see if I could have a better relationship with my dad. I'm sure glad I did. If someone's drinking troubling you, you might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon or Al-Ateen family group from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON or go to alanon.org.
Welcome back in to Rover Sports. What a great call that we just had with Jordan. Is it Jordan Elkhurst or
Verhulst?
Jordan Verhulst. Not the easiest name, but
super guy.
Jordan's a great guy. Yeah, he's a grinder. He's worked hard, and he has Memphis. Yeah, Memphis is kind of this fun story right now. They're a little like North Carolina. They do have the brand. They do have history, and they're starting to turn it on. But you know what? We got a half hour left, and we're going to talk some NFL draft right now. Charlie, you've been looking at these prospects a lot. This is going to be a fun draft because this draft, I believe, is a deep draft in terms of tackles, in terms of maybe some wideouts. What do you think about the draft?
Yeah, it goes about six wideouts deep right now. And maybe, like I said, the guy flying under the radar is the kid from Memphis right now who seems to be climbing up the boards. I fell in love with Drake London. It's no secret. He seems to be all of a sudden climbing up everyone's board. I had loved him, you know, months ago, and it's not like I found some hidden gem. He's really good. I think again, but you know, wide receivers, they go very deep. So I truly believe I'm going to die on this hill. There's no NFL All Pro quarterback in this draft. Period.
I agree.
And there's going to be four guys who trade up in the first 15 picks and think they know something no one else does. I'm telling you, they don't. There's no, when those windows get even tighter, we're talking about guys with 58% completion ratios now. When those windows get tighter and the speed is even faster, and, you know, and the guys are taller and heavier and quicker, like, there's nobody coming out of this draft that's going in the Hall of Fame, I'll tell you that, quarterback-wise. It's very deep in a lot of areas, but not at quarterback. But it's the most important position in the world. People are going to think they see something no one else does, and they're going to take a flyer.
So, Charlie, I have a question for you. So, you know, it's interesting you bring up Drake London, and I've heard a lot about him lately. You know what? And it scares me when it comes to the Eagles because they have three first-round picks. And what else scares me is USC receivers in the NFL.
Yep.
I mean, it's just USC. I think Nelson Aguilar, I think Mike Williams, and there's so many guys that, like, and that's why I'm sitting there going, take Dotson from Penn State. Do not take don't take London, because USC receivers scare me when it comes to it. It's just it's like a Penn State running back. It's like they don't pan out, you know.
I would take the kid from Arkansas, Burks. That kid is big. He's got great hands. He's great after the tackle. He's going to go in the first round somewhere.
I don't know if he has the I worry about his explosiveness, honestly.
I mean, but in the end, like I said, so he's not going to break one like DeSean Jackson. But I mean, he's almost like a Metcalf kind of receiver too. You know what I mean?
He's AJ Brown at the next level.
Yeah, like he's. I think that kid's going to go early. I understand about the USC wide receivers for sure. And London, look, let's face it, gets hurt a lot.
Yeah.
In college. So, what's going to happen in the pros? But, yeah, the wide receiver position goes very, very deep this year. Like I said, probably five or six deep.
Oh, my gosh. Round. Let's talk about some of the – David Bell of Purdue is a guy who's absolutely just really has production. I'll tell you, George Pickens, if he didn't get hurt, he would be maybe a top 15 pick. He's a complete stud, George Pickens, from Georgia.
Yeah, but what about the kid from
Alabama?
Alabama, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Jameson Williams, too.
Fantastic. Coming off an ACL, but fantastic.
But you're still going to get him. Romeo Doubs of Nevada. So you can maybe wait on a wide receiver.
Sleeper. Like I called out of Toledo, the kid from Toledo years ago in Pittsburgh. Again, the kid from Memphis, Calvin Austin. I'm just telling you, he's got that special quality, man.
Those Memphis guys. Right,
so, Charlie, Deebo Samuel made a huge impact this year.
Yep.
Okay? Wasn't your traditional receiver, certainly not your traditional running back. There are certain guys that are starting to label as the
playmakers.
So, the Eagles have three first-round picks. Obviously, you know, I'm looking at the CBS draft, and I honestly am excited where they drafted. And if Howie Roseman did this, you know, I think we'd be, oh my God, this isn't Howie Roseman style. He's not going to blow this.
They got
N'Kobe Dean.
Who
I love, the linebacker out of Georgia, as a stud, okay, at 15. And they take David Ojabo from Michigan.
Ojabo.
And then.
Pass rusher.
Yeah.
The thing about him, they're saying, did he benefit from Hutchinson dominating so much? Like, did he benefit? I don't know. The answer is I don't know.
I actually think he has so much. I think he has a lot of ability. I think that he was inconsistent his first few years. I think that his athletic ability is going to pop, the kid Ojabo. I'm very excited. How about George Karlaftis from Purdue, who's a complete stud?
Would this be Philly's first linebacker draft since like 1976 or something?
Probably.
Like Jerry Robinson, wasn't he the last linebacker?
Chuck Buchnarek, but maybe you're right.
Jerry Robinson, I think, from UCLA in the first round, like in like 1978 or something, was the last linebacker Philly took.
No, you know who it is? It was the bust from USC.
Smith?
Wait,
I know. Devin Smith.
No.
First round?
No, he went first round. Eagles draft.
He's from Oregon, maybe? Chip Kelly?
He was at USC. It was Chip Kelly's draft.
I know who you're talking about. Marcus Smith.
Marcus Smith. I think that was the last. I'm pulling up their draft.
He was first round. Let's see.
First or second round? He was just horrible.
Yeah, he was a first round pick. And it was absolutely awful.
I mean, a lot of teams have multiple picks. You know what I mean? It can't get better. You know what? The Eagle fans. You know, are you giving up a couple picks for Russell Wilson?
I'm not. I don't think this team is ready to win. Like even in a bad division, I don't think they're ready to win right now. Like you think about the key players that you have on your team. Like, I mean, they've had debates on the radio stations. Like, who's the Eagles should be the Eagles starting quarterback? Did Jalen Hurts, in your opinion, do enough to warrant that for another year?
Yeah, he gave enough to give another look. Because again, like I said, we're in an instant gratification league now, where if you don't make it in the first two league, but then I mean, Lawrence is coming back. He didn't light the world on fire, you know. But I think the league has changed. It's either you produce in the first year or you're gone. The old let's let the guy develop for 3 to 4 years. I mean, you're a bust if you don't, you know, at least make the Pro Bowl in your first 2 years.
But it's because they drafted a mid second round value. If they drafted Hurts in the first five picks, you get. Look at Sam Darnold; he gets 3 years. Look at Daniel Jones; he's going to get his fourth year. He does.
Well, who's a better option right now? Then, like, if you seriously, who's a better option than Jalen Hurts that Philly could get?
Let me think about this.
I don't. You know what? I don't think there is an option right now. I you know what? I don't want to waste the draft capital that you've acquired. Okay, now granted, you saved a bunch of money getting rid of Carson. You ate it this year. I think the kid needs to come back and have another year. And I know, you know, Dr. Lewis does not want Jalen Hurts starting next year, but I don't want to give up all that capital. You need to build this defense up. You need to bring in linebackers. You need to get a shutdown corner. And guess what? Jalen Reagor isn't panning out, so you know what? Later in the first round, you can either trade back and get one of these receivers, which I think would be a smart move.
Well, you know, as a quarterback, I think Garoppolo is pretty good.
No, why would you give up? He's not a difference maker.
Yeah, first round pick.
You're going to give up like a fifth round or a fourth round
not.
Pick
That's not
for Garoppolo.
Pittsburgh is maybe they're a team that could take a Russell Wilson and maybe do something because they need to rebuild the offensive line too. But aside from that, and you know, it's turning out that Bush is a busted linebacker, but. Aside from that, like I said, they got enough pieces there to compete with a quarterback and maybe a few tweaks to the line. Philly doesn't. I mean, you got to barrel through that NFC, man. Like that's a tough ask.
Yeah, the Steelers have the weapons. You have the best defensive player in the NFL right
now.
Underrated
weapons. Like their weapon, they have a ton of weapons all over the place.
Oh, Johnson, Claypool. I mean, Claypool.
Well, Najee Harris, who had a great year as a rookie.
Claypool's great.
Freiermuth.
He's a young. He had that one scenario at Minnesota where he was immature and it got picked up by everybody. But, DeAndre Johnson's unbelievable. He could be like a top 10 receiver in the NFL.
Philly's got a chance to do something really special with these picks. I mean, you can rebuild. Like, you can truly – you get three first-rounders.
So let me ask you this question, Charlie. Do you, if you're Philadelphia and you see how draft-heavy the quarterback class is next year, you're going to have Caleb Williams talking about coming out. You're gonna have
I don't think Caleb's eligible.
If he's a redshirt sophomore, he is. Yeah. If you redshirt, you can come out after your sophomore.
I don't mean to interrupt, but
third year in college.
He was a true freshman last year.
Okay, but there's a
couple really good
Stroud. Keep going, coach.
Year.
Sorry to interrupt.
CJ Stroud. There's a couple of really good quarterbacks coming out.
Bryce Young.
So do you trade one of the first rounds this year in next year's draft?
If you think you'll improve your position, like if you're going to go from 19 to somewhere, maybe from 11 to 17, I would. I mean, it depends. If you're getting a second with it, you'll never get a second with it. But if you trade a first this year, you're going to get a third with it too, maybe. You have three picks. They have a lot of draft capital, like you said, to play around with.
And I think the Giants should move back because
they have two top seven picks, right?
But you look at the Giants, like this offensive line class with Charles Cross.
Evan Beal.
The kid from
NC State would be the best one.
The kid from NC State. So, by the way, Tristan Wirfs from Iowa was the best tackle that class. He went number 14 to Tampa Bay. And who were the guys that went earlier? Wirfs or Wilfs, who was played at Alabama. He's a pretty good tackle. But why do you need to draft someone in the top five if you could get someone great at 15? Like, you know Trevor Penning from Northern?
Yeah,
that's a really good lineman. Fa'alele at Minnesota can be amazing. He's 6'8". Like, the Giants don't need to draft in the top five. They should totally move one of their picks back.
If you're going to get some more capital and it's worth it, yeah, I would. But, you know, again, like I said, too many teams try to get cute. Like, what Philly's done, they should prosper from. They shouldn't, you know, right now you have the ability, like Coach said, you can rebuild your entire defense right now. You can go edge rusher, linebacker, cornerback. Or you can take wide, you know, if you really, you know, you look, they, let's face it, they need another wide receiver.
Absolutely do.
You know, you could take, this is the wide receiver rich class. Now would be the time to pluck one of them versus on a year where there are no good deep wide receivers.
Well, maybe in the second round.
It's almost like
round.
Drafting a quarterback this year. It makes no sense.
Maybe in the second round.
Maybe Dotson's sitting around from Penn State in the second round.
But Charlie, when you talk about a quarterback rich draft, guess what? The Eagles are not going to be the worst or the second worst team. So even though you talk about next year being great, it's not like you're going to get Stroud next year because you need the first pick. You need to tank for those guys.
Well, it depends on what you have to trade with. Yeah, you know what I mean?
You're not going
to
trade. Jacksonville could be the worst team again.
Cincinnati was taking all sorts of calls for Joe Burrow, but it didn't matter what Miami offered him because it's Joe Burrow. So
yeah, but with this year's class, there is no Joe Burrow. Yeah. There's no Justin Herbert. Okay. There's a bunch of Tua Tagovailoas, okay? That could be something.
I think Willis and Strong have upsides, and I think Desmond Ritter could be a starter in this league for a while. I really think Ritter can
start
this year.
You just gave him his max potential. Yeah. Could be a starter. Yeah. Like that's his said it right. It's right. You're right on the money with that. You're right on the money.
Well, Dak Prescott, exactly I never would have thought.
Could be a starter. Not could be an all-pro. Could be a Super Bowl-winning quarterback. Could be a starter.
Dak and Russell, we never thought Russell or Dak would turn out the way they did.
I don't know. I mean, I look at Russell Wilson, in all honesty, Spencer, he won everywhere he played in college. You know, he's a winner.
So same with Desmond Ritter of Cincinnati.
He struggled it against Alabama big time. Yeah. Man. That dude got in big competition.
He was undefeated 2 years.
Tulsa.
Could have beaten Georgia, and they came within 1 point of winning against Georgia.
Didn't show up. Georgia didn't care about that
he
game.
Still took a team. Cincinnati had no weapons, but you look at Willis, you're going to watch him throw. He has the arm talent. Carson Strong has big-time arm talent. Watch these guys throw at the combine.
Ritter's wildly inaccurate in college. Like, imagine what he gets to in the pros.
Josh Allen was kind of inaccurate as well at Wyoming. His completion percentage was awful at Wyoming.
We can write this down and meet the same time next year. I'm going to tell you there has not been one successful draft pick at a quarterback. There's just not. Like, I know everybody wants to – you have to believe, but
I would look into free agents.
Successful meaning they don't start multiple
NFL
years.
NFL starter as a freshman. Or as a first or second year starter.
No,
in the NFL,
but I'm saying
and win,
like
– and win half your games.
No good career.
No all-pro career.
Okay.
Well, but it's interesting, Charlie. We're having this discussion, and we look back at the 2017 draft, okay? And you got Baker Mayfield, contract year for him. And the Browns are not sold on giving him a big contract. I wouldn't give him at all, okay? You look at some of those guys, like Josh Rosen's already out of the league. Or maybe he's not, but he's certainly not the impact player that anyone thought. And he's bounced around four or five different teams. You know, Josh Allen's the premier pick out of that entire draft class. Andy Dalton's been on two teams already.
And think about it. What do Allen and Rodgers and Herbert all have in common? They are traditional. I mean, Herbert can run. And Allen can run. We know that. But they still got rifle arms, and they throw from the pocket.
Exactly.
Like, you know,
right.
Like I struggle with Tua. I hate saying it. Seems like a good kid, but Tua's never going to win a Super Bowl. You're never going to say Tua wins a Super Bowl. You're never as a starting quarterback. Never going to happen. Kyler Murray, I said the day he was drafted, never going to win a Super Bowl. Look at these quarterbacks that came out that RPO guys, Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray, like all these guys, the defenses are catching up. And Lamar Jackson, who was once thought of as the best quarterback in football, they're talking about not signing now.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. So all of a sudden, here's an option. Like with Baker Mayfield coming up, the quarterback class is going to get shuffled again, which is great from our perspective because everybody loves drama. Who's the next guy coming in? You know, I heard Jameis Winston, he's a free agent this year, and he's looking possibly at going to Pittsburgh. I heard that today on the radio.
I could see it happen. Think about it. There's 10 guys in the world who excel at that position maybe, in the entire world.
Yeah.
There's 10 guys who can play at elite level, like that at that level. It's just incredible, like how hard that position must be. It's the hardest position in all sports.
It is hard, but you could have a special team around like a Tua. Like Jimmy G had a special team around you. Sometimes you draft a quarterback who's just like pretty good and you could have a special team around you, or you get an exceptional coach like a Sean Payton that can resurrect your career as a quarterback. Like Drew Brees in with the Chargers was a mediocre quarterback with the Chargers. Then he got with Sean Payton and it exploded. It was Kurt Warner, the same sort of thing, Mike Martz. But
I also think it takes a certain type of person. Okay. And I think Drew Brees is a winner. He works hard at everything he does. I think Kurt Warner believed every snap he had was his last snap in the NFL, and that's what made him special. Spencer, not to change gears, but you know what? It's interesting with NFL free agencies kicking off too, and there's some key notable players. Like you got Allen Robinson, who teams are looking for a receiver. You know, if you think about the Eagles, we have draft capital or we have money in the bank. Do you look at a guy like that? Obviously, Davante Adams. I think Davante Adams is going to see what he's going to watch what Aaron Rodgers does before he does anything.
I mean, it just shows you how despicable Aaron Rodgers of a human really is. They're waiting on him. They're way over the cap. They're still $25.5 million over the cap. He's supposed to make 40-some million this year. He needs to let them know so they can shuffle around a bunch of contracts. If not, and he's still making them wait. And they have 2 more weeks left, I think, the 16th?
Yeah.
To let them know. I mean, look, if Philly went out and got Robinson, they could save the draft picks and build their defense. I mean, sure.
I would love that.
Yeah, that'll make a lot of sense. That guy, I mean, I don't know what happened in Chicago. He just fell off a cliff last year. And you got to believe it's not his talent. His talent's still there.
No,
he just went quarterbacks going. It was a musical chair of quarterbacks. The bad coach.
I mean,
do the Eagles have a lot of cap space, or it's middle tier? I thought it's mid tier. I'm looking at it right here. It says they're the 20th in the NFL.
But here's another guy, Juju Smith-Schuster. Is he signing back with Pittsburgh? You know, you can go out and get some of these guys that that have a chance.
Godwin coming. What an interesting name for Philly would be that J.C. Jackson from New England too. That D back who is obviously turning into one of the best in the league. Like, he's going to get big money, but
Patriots should keep him.
Yeah. But you fill a need for. I mean, he's 26, so you fill a need for the next 7 years.
Oh my God, Chandler Jones is a free agent. It says Tyrann Mathieu. How about that? The Honey Badger.
Or what about Mike Williams from the Chargers for Philly? Like big. What they don't have is that big touchdown grabber, that 6'5", 6'6", guy who can jump out of the building and catch it, jump over everyone else and catch a touchdown.
There's so many studs on this list. Now, I'm not sure if teams can match it, but, you know, Gilmore is a guy who in Philly
would be tremendous.
Like, if you get Gilmore, you don't need to get a cornerback.
Godwin off the ACL. I mean,
Kyle Fuller.
So, guys, as we're getting ready to wrap up, Charlie, baseball, you know, was supposed to be in full swing, but they've already started to cancel the first two series, which I think is a joke.
I got my mom and my sister a trip to the St. Patrick's Day game this year in Clearwater. What a bummer. Like, you know, went all out, gave them, you know, first class everything, and there you go. I'll tell you what, I'm not going to lie and say they're going to lose me because I'm just that much of a degenerate. I'll be back. But I'll tell you what, they're doing a good job at trying to get rid of everyone, that's for sure, because these, you know, they're arguing over such trivial, it's trivial at the end of the day. Like, is the minimum salary going to be 580 or 620? Like, yeah, give me a break. Like,
listen, we're all going to be baseball people.
Some won't be back.
It doesn't bother. I don't know.
If you missed the first two series are already canceled.
Yeah.
So we're already in the middle of April.
Yep.
We could go into May. Well, they should shorten the season anyway and then make it a bigger playoff.
Baseball gets good in August and July. Like,
what are you going to do the first 2 weeks of April now? Like, there's not going to be any baseball. There's going to be
USFL
will be on, though.
Yes.
But the point is, we're always going to like baseball, and lockouts, they barely happen, like once every 8 years. There's a lot more to worry about in sports than this lockout.
Yeah, but
people move down there because they want to be, that's when they see their team, and it's
awful for the minor leagues. What do you think about, this season isn't going to be canceled completely, do you think?
No, it won't be canceled, but Charlie, the one thing I don't want them to do is have extra playoff games.
Yeah.
That's what they want to do. Let's have extra. Let's continue to water down the postseason. Baseball's long enough.
It's too long.
Yes.
And they should shorten the games to 7 innings, or eight innings. Not 7, but 8, because 7's too short.
I like that, but I hate the one wild card game. Why can't you make it 3 wild card games?
They have done that, and that's pathetic. Like, you don't need that. You don't need to continue to water down the product. I think because it water down the regular season, every game should matter. 162.
Growing up, it was East versus West. Yep, you won or you lost. Right. It was that simple. You played the whole season, and you won or lost. Two teams.
I'm kind of with you, but baseball is very slim in the playoffs. I'm with you on college football too. I don't need the expansion to 12. At four is fine, actually.
They should end the season earlier because they start losing ratings with football anyway. Like, as soon as football comes on, people tune a lot. Like, I'll watch it, but a lot of people don't.
Yeah, well, I'll be the first one to tell you if the Phillies aren't in it, you know, it's like okay, it's not.
We
should
do a whole podcast on baseball changes or baseball rules because I would love to see like 6 foul balls being out. You know, maybe.
Do you guys like the NLDH?
No, I don't either.
Yeah, I hate it. I hate it. Because it'll make the game longer. Now you want to shorten the game. Now you're going to make it, because you have no automatic out now. Yeah, no strategy. Do you bunt? Do you pinch hit? That's all gone.
And that's the other thing.
I like fat guys who can hit. Like,
yeah, but that's all gone now. No strategy. No pinch hit. Do we pinch hit? Do we not? It's all gone.
The shift. I don't want the shift. They should get rid of the shift. Yep. I mean,
I would like that. Get rid of the shift.
Go back to the way it was.
Yeah, let's talk about bunting. Let's go traditional baseball. Traditional baseball. Traditional.
Don't fix what's not broken.
Yeah.
You know?
I love the stealing. They don't do everything. It's like they're swinging for power now. Yep. That's all they want to do.
Oh, and it's like the three-pointer in basketball, right?
Well, you know they stopped testing for steroids after last year. That's what they want back. They want the
juice.
They want the bombs back.
Analytics are, it's horrible. Yeah, you want to see small ball win. Yeah.
I want my manager, 75 years old, chewing tobacco, overweight. That's what I don't want this.
Smoking.
I don't want
Dave Kapler. You don't want Dave Kapler.
Gabe Kapler flexing, reading his charts. I don't want that. I want my manager batting out of shape because he spent his entire league on buses learning the game.
Charlie Manuel?
Yeah, like that. Exactly.
Yeah, I'm tired of
Who's more endearing, Charlie Manuel or Gabe Kapler?
Gabe Kapler. Yeah, he talks down to people.
Joe Girardi. I mean, it's easy.
I like what's his name, Dusty Baker.
Yeah, Dusty Baker. Yeah, when he's great. He's absolutely great.
Even Joe Maddon's a little too new school, right?
Phillies don't have enough. They don't want to worry about it unless they make moves, which I heard they're going to. But I've heard that.
Yeah, Chris Pine would be great. Real quick, Charlie.
Harper's been great.
Harden's opening night tomorrow night in Philadelphia.
Yep.
What's your thoughts?
I'll be there. Number one, number two. I think against the same Nick team who honestly I think Embiid number one's foul shots will be cut in half, over under 13. I don't think they're going to give him. I think Thibodeau, if he's smart, went to the refs and said, "We're not going to have." So watch for foul shots to be cut in half.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And then Harden will have his 30. You know
what I love? Personally, I love the fact that Tyrese Maxey's been such a key factor. You know, they're going to have to get. They're gonna have to get your boy Harris.
Toby Harris. Going,
but we are
off the.
Oh my gosh! Like it's gonna be an amazing scene tomorrow night, isn't it, Coach?
Thanks, guys,
for
tuning in.
Off the bench.
Thanks, guys, for tuning in. Over.
Thanks, buddy. Almost said.